The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Last night took an L, but tonight I bounce back. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Joel, Nick, Barry, till 4, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. As we continue to roll on, one in the books, two to go. Plenty more of the big show. See this Daryl Morey stuff?
No. What?
He came out and did a phone interview where he basically said, because of the fact that the MVP was not voted on with the same criteria that was used 2 years ago, that all the awards should be scrapped. To which Blake Griffin responded, I think we should scrap the playoffs too, and we should just give everybody participation awards. So it caused some reaction. But, I mean, first of all, I think all general managers should stay out of it. There's a reason why R.C. Buford and you know, a lot of the big-time GMs in this league don't tweet.
Right.
But I think at the same time, you and I have covered this ad nauseum to say that we don't know what the criteria is. And until we do, there's always going to be talk like this. But it's best left for the people that either vote on it or the people that have hard feelings about it, not for the general manager of the team. I mean, you got bigger fish to fry. You want to win a championship.
Yeah. Who cares, Daryl Morey?
Exactly.
Like, that's just, these are off-season awards. This is, you know what I mean? This is the dinner roll. This ain't the main course. Who cares, dude? Like, focus on building a team and winning a championship. Go get Melo. Stop talking about the MVP race that's already done. You know what I mean? Daryl Morey is a typical Houston sports fan in that regard. No one cares. No, you shouldn't care about the MVP that much. Is it great if he wins it? Sure. How about just be happy that he's been in it the two of the last 3 years and get to stepping? Keep moving. Well, go build that championship team. Focus on the Warriors and the Spurs and the Cavs.
Third week in June, you know?
Yeah, who cares?
So it's just over with. And you look, you already acquired Chris Paul. I mean, to be honest with you, for all of us, including me leading the bandwagon going, now he said he's got something up his sleeve and kidding, like what could he possibly have? Fact of the matter is he got Chris Paul. That's a pretty big get.
Yep.
So you're off to a good start, but I say it all the time. There's a reason why the rearview mirror is small and the windshield's huge, because the future's bright and you've got to now two guys to build around, and you've got work to do, so don't worry about it anymore.
Priorities, man, priorities.
And get them straight. There's lots of GMs that would love to have the priorities of having the team that he has already in that locker room assembled and try to have the challenge of trying to get it over the hump. And I don't think many of them will be worried about how the voting is done and if we should scrap postseason awards. So there's that. So that was our bit of basketball talk, I guess. Are you ready to look at the entire... I mean, I was just looking at it last night. Everybody's also weighing in on the fact that why the trade deadline was so important was the fact that the big-name teams got better. I mean, there are teams now that, you know, the Red Sox GM is now saying that the Yankees are now the Golden State Warriors. I'm not going that far, you know? No. I give credit to the teams that went out and tried to get some players, but I don't think that anybody's the Golden State Warriors, and I don't think anything's decided.
No. No. I mean, yeah, teams got better, and the Astros didn't necessarily. I mean, again, like I said at the beginning, I think this the when you look at the Liriano trade, you actually did get better. Whether fans want to, it wasn't the big splash you were looking for, but moving Aoki and replacing him with Fisher thus far looks to be good. Fisher's hitting 300. He's a leadoff guy. He's got some speed. He's better defensively. I think he's a better left-handed stick. It looks like so far, and he's got more power than Aoki. I mean, he's proven that as well already. And then you got better with the left-handed specialist in the bullpen, and not to mention a guy who can eat up some innings if you needed him to, and spot start down the stretch, so you don't wear your starters out. So, no, not a big splash, but whatever. People were asking about names and who is going to be. You know, we talked about the waiver deadline and all that, and some of the names that you might see thrown around. You might see Verlander. Most Upton. Likely, huh?
Upton also in Detroit has been mentioned.
Yeah, you'll see R.A. Dickey, Marco Estrada,
Mike Napoli.
Nolasco, Ricky Nolasco from the Angels as far as starting pitching goes. Okay. So, you know, outfielders, first base, you know, Yonder Alonso is a guy I think that you might see get some run, but there's just none of these are going to be super impactful unless Verlander clears and that happens. You know what I mean?
Right.
But the guys like, I mean, you look at R.A. Dickey and some of these guys, Estrada, they're not putting up great numbers compared to seasons past.
Do you want to put a knuckleball, a baller that's up and down on the mound?
Hell no.
No, in the playoffs? No, absolutely not.
No, none of those guys that I just named outside of Verlander would I care about them adding anyways.
Right.
These are just names that you might see out there. And I was thinking about that as I was driving home, listening to Fred and Jerome, poke fun at me a little bit, and rightfully so, deservedly so. I'm defending offense in the playoffs, and most people disagree with that, but the numbers don't lie. But I get the point. I'm not stupid. I understand the game of baseball. I understand pitching matters. That was the point I was making. But that said, you know, other than, I mean, well, really, was there any Randy Johnsons or Chris Sales in this year's free agent, or not free agent, but trade market? I mean, there really wasn't.
There wasn't.
You know, and the biggest one, if you really want to get upset, the biggest one, the one that got away to me was Quintana. Look what he's done since going to the Cubs.
Yeah.
He's 2-1, sub-2 ERA. He's striking out everybody he faces, it seems like. That's the one that got away.
And there were a lot of people that were giving up on him because of the fact that on a bad team, he wasn't putting up like
he wasn't putting up
numbers.
Good numbers. But look what happens when you go play for a team that's in contention. So, I mean, that's one that I feel like got away. It sucks that the Pirates lasted as long as they did. I think Gerrit Cole and Watson would have been guys you might have seen.
Yep.
And they still may. As they tank, this is, again, what we were talking about earlier. You might see the Pirates put Watson and Cole on waivers, and they, you know, if they clear, then, hey, that's great. They can use them as trade. But I don't think they will clear.
And their contracts are friendly.
I think the Astros or a lot of teams will try to snatch them up in a heartbeat. But, we'll see. None of these names, though, you should be too excited about if you're looking for starting pitching.
Yeah, so. I mean, look, short of Verlander with the same offer on the table of picking up as much of the salary as you can dump on Detroit to pick up, you know, he's that kind of guy. You look at years past, David Price was out there at the deadline, you know, a couple years ago. And that was a guy that, look, was sought after for a reason. There's a guy in the regular season anyway that put up great numbers. He just has never done it in the playoffs. But you mentioned, because the Randy Johnson, there's always been a guy or two, but you and I both talked about, as much as I gave you a hard time about Sonny Gray was not a guy that's going to be, everybody's going to fear come playoff time, like a Roger Clemens or even a Curt Schilling or guys like that. There just wasn't that guy out there. There wasn't an overpowering, dominant pitcher that everybody said, God, that's the key.
Yep.
Whoever gets him is going to be pushed over the top.
Yep.
They just weren't out there.
No, they weren't. So it's, would it have been nice to have a Gray or a Darvish or a Quintana? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Then you know you've got a solid three going in. But I'm not so sure that Sonny Gray, the way he's pitched this year, now he's gotten a lot better.
Lately, he's put, come on.
I mean, I'm not so sure that those guys are leaps and bounds better than Morton or McHugh when he's on. I just don't.
Well, you look,
I don't.
At what,
I've never been high that high on Sonny Gray.
We talked about his velocity all year, but you look at what Morton did again last night. Yes, he gave up a couple of runs, but he only gave up two hits.
Yep.
And his velocity was still up, and you know it seemed like he was in control, which is huge with what we've been talking about lately about the fact that Keuchel and his slider he's not placing it like he does when he's back to true form, but at least he looked decent. You know, and we all know that we've been at nauseam about McCullers, and we know that McHugh's still finding a way back, but he still hasn't looked bad.
Nope.
And his velocity's been up. which I don't think enough people realized. His velocity has been a couple miles an hour higher than it was over the last couple years.
Well, that's good. Maybe they rebuilt his arm bionically.
After having a dead arm, that's one thing that I look at.
Yeah. A couple of people are asking us about fantasy football.
Yeah.
And I know that that's ramping up. And someone said, are we going to be doing a Chris, when will you guys plan on doing some fantasy football stuff? And Nestor said, do y'all intend to do a weekly pick'em segment when the season starts? If not, please do. I am not a fantasy expert. I play. I have my own advice. I think a couple of times this year I've offered up some baseball advice when it seemed appropriate that Nick usually ignores. But I think what we should do is just get an expert on the show. One that actually does the game. And like, you know, on Sundays we have, what's his name? He's out of Austin. Damn it. I can't remember his name.
Rick Saratella, I think.
Or, no. I'm so mad about
Adam Rank. Adam Rank is great, but I don't know if I can get him on weekly, but he is certainly a fantasy guy for the NFL Network. But there'll definitely be segments for sure that will
Sigmund Bloom. Sorry, I just remembered. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No problem.
But it hit my head.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some segments where we'll have a fantasy guest. Weekly, that's yet to be confirmed.
Well, we get Sigmund on Sundays, and so he might be willing to come in on like a Wednesday, so you can either hear him on Wednesday or hear him on Sunday. We could, but I think we should do something like that because, again, I think we all play.
Yeah.
But I'm not like I'm a stats dork, but I'm not like that kind of stats dork for fantasy like AJ is. He'll do weekly rankings and all that. But I think leaving it to somebody like Sigmund Bloom, who's fantastic, would be something we'll explore.
What, Mark File last year?
I don't believe
Mark Flood.
Mark Flood.
Yeah. From the Gamer
so
Wall.
So we had Mark Flood. I saw him in the office the other day. And I know people at the office have been sending us emails that they've been working on possibilities. So
cool.
One way or another, we might be able to drum something up.
We'll certainly incorporate it into the show. We did it last year. We'll do it again.
And I'm sure we'll get our picks in weekly on the NFL, too.
We'll definitely pick games, right?
Right.
Okay.
And just like, you know, the other day, too, I thought about that. Just because we were looking at wins and losses for teams, before the season starts, we'll break down where what our exact predictions are.
I haven't even done it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just that initial one when we looked at the schedule when it came out.
But I heard you say, well, I got to go back and listen to that so I can see where everybody picked. I don't think anybody made that their lock, stock, and barrel pick. I think between now and the first week of the season, we can break down where we think everybody's going to be, but that's coming as well.
Yep. Good deal. All right, guys. I want to tell you about one of my favorite new places to eat in the city of Houston. And if you haven't gone out there, and I'm excited to say I'm hearing from a lot of you that you're trying it, and that's good. And you're all telling me you love it. But if you haven't yet, you need to make your way out to Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen at 1901 Taft in Midtown. You're going to love this place. It's a fusion of both Southern comfort and Indian food. And I'll be honest, the first time I went there, I hadn't recently had Indian food, but the one time I did have it, I didn't like it. I just didn't like the food. So I went there with an open mind, and I'm glad I did because Haas and the guys out there make an amazing dinner for you. I loved it. I think you're going to love it. And it's just not me. Like I said, the listeners, my friends, they're all going out there and they're enjoying it. It's a mix. It's a fusion of both Southern comfort and Indian food. And they're known for having the best butter chicken in Houston. But I tell you what, put that Himalayan Heat Burger on your list of must-try burgers in the city of Houston. Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen makes a badass Himalayan Heat Burger. They also have quesadillas made with naan bread. They have wings and sliders. If you don't want chicken fried steak, get the chicken curry. All of it's delicious, all authentic, made from family recipes over the years. And they have a full-service bar, so you can go out there, get a drink, just chill and hang out when you're in Midtown going out. And the best thing is if you don't feel like getting off the couch and getting it, but you still want to eat that delicious lamb vindaloo, then you can get it delivered to you via DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub. Again, they're located at 1901 Taft. You can look them up on Facebook at CNI713. Just search CNI713. Take your taste buds on a delicious journey around the world with Cowboys and Indians Texan Kitchen. There's nothing like it. And guys, when you go out there, tell Haas and Imran Barry said hello.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, gang, we always like to try and give back to you, the loyal listeners that are all suspects that we appreciate. And here is one way we can do that for you. Right now, you can win a free night stay to any Red Roof Inn in the United States. Check out our Facebook page, ESPN Houston, for your chance to win. Just use our hints and at redroof.com to identify which Red Roof Inn is in the picture. We'll randomly choose a winner from all the correct answers. Today's hints: this city is the birthplace of NBA player Doug McDermott. Dougie Buckets. Sarpsborg, Norway became its sister city in 2005. And it was called Les Grandes Fortes by early French explorers. And no, you cannot guess male golfer, female golfer, or Chinese. So, check out the Facebook page, ESPN Houston, for more details. But try to win a free night stay to any Red Roof Inn in the United States. How about that? And by the way, shout out to our man, Scott in Deer Park. I forgot to do this the other day, but Scott's going through some health issues. So prayers up and shout out to Scotty for a quick recovery, because he is one of those suspects that's always a great loyal listener.
Yeah, man. Get well soon.
Yeah, for sure. And JJ's still missing in action, by the way. I sent him a tweet, are you okay? And never heard back. So I don't know.
He mad.
You think?
Yeah. So right. I would think.
He doesn't strike me as a guy that's on Twitter a lot, though, either.
No?
No. I caught him chatting with my sister one day. It was very disturbing. I'm just going to let you know.
That's hilarious.
Because first, I want to know how the hell it happened.
He could be your brother.
I'm just going, what the hell? You know, again, the Lombardi moment. What the hell's going on right
brother
now?
Brother JJ.
Jeez. I wanted to get your guys' feedback and takeaway again from kind of the fallout from this weekend. A couple of things in response to Dana White. First, Nick, I mean, you got the audio of it, but there was Dana White was pretty critical of Woodley, and yeah. Woodley decided to kind of
I'm starting to think there's just a little beef between. I mean, not starting. I've kind of known it, but it's solidified as a beef that probably won't go away. I feel like Robbie Lawler's kind of his new favorite, because almost everybody and their mom said Cerrone won that fight. Dana White came out and said he gave the fight to the first and third. And then he goes off and criticizes his own champion, and Woodley wasn't happy about it. So we'll hear from Dana White first, and then Woodley hopped on the MMA Hour with Ariel.
And just for the layman like me, fair to understand, Tyron Woodley still won the fight.
Yep.
But Dana White was critical of the fact that he didn't do it sooner.
Was critical of the fact of it being just a boring fight and him not trying to finish. So here's what Dana White and Woodley had to say.
What was there to be happy with? It broke the record for the least punches thrown ever in a title fight. I think it was 130, was the worst fight ever, apparently. This was 60. So, I mean, the numbers speak for itself, and it was just horrible.
My shoulder is fucking torn. I'm really upset because I didn't say anything during the fight, because that's what a champion does. I went out there, and I completely dominated a fighter who, once again, was on a 7-fight win streak. I don't care so much about the fans. But when your job title is promoter, promote your f***ing fighters. Promote your champions. Don't demote your champions. I threw my shoulder out in the first round. I wasn't able to throw any damaging shots. For you guys that don't understand what a labrum tear is, go get on Google, Wikipedia, and figure it out. Because I didn't even tell my coaches until I was getting my medicals done afterwards. And I haven't earned a big title fight. And I'm not a draw. And I'm boring when I have 9 first-round finishes. That is the stupidest shit ever. I'm owed a public apology. You're going to publicly scrutinize me, Dana White? You publicly need to apologize to me. I've done nothing but good stuff for the sport. I've done nothing but be a good model for the fucking organization. I always uphold my responsibilities with the organization. It's time out for that. You need to be a man. You owe me a public apology. And if I don't get that, I'm going to start leaking some shit if people don't want to be out in the wind. Oh. And I'm not even kidding about that.
Whoa, what are you referring to?
They know what I'm referring to.
Ooh.
That's why I thought that clip was so juicy, because now he's threatened to leak secrets.
He's angry.
He's mad.
First of all, good luck getting an apology from Dana White. That's
never
going to
happen. Yeah.
You're better off. Damian Maia had a better chance of getting a takedown in that fight than you do of getting an apology from Dana White. That's not going to happen.
But I don't understand the animosity towards Woodley from Dana White.
Because it was a boring-ass fight, and that's what he is. His job as a promoter is to promote exciting fights. You can't have a fight on a pay-per-view that boring. Like, I don't want to pay my money to watch that garbage. Put that on a free fight somewhere, okay. But you got a champion out there that's not, won't let his hands go. He's stuffing takedowns, which is his job. But that makes for an ugly fight, man.
Yeah. What about the 9 first round finishes, or how the fact that he finished Robbie Lawler doesn't stand for anything?
Yeah, it does. But that doesn't, I mean, this is a what have you done for me lately sport. That's in the past.
Yeah, because the Thompson, in terms of lately, Thompson went to decision. This fight went to decision. So, yeah, you're right. In terms of that, that would be the one argument that I would mention for that, because it is a what have you done for me lately. But he still won, and he wouldn't give him the GSP fight, despite GSP being a welterweight. I just thought that was interesting. But it'll be interesting to see how it pans out.
My gosh. GSP, if the way he fought, shoulder or no shoulder, the way he fought Damian Maia, Damian Maia isn't a boring fighter per se. He just ends up with boring fights because no one wants to go to the ground with him. So the focus is not doing that.
Right.
It's not knockouts. It's not headhunting. It's not throwing. It's don't get taken down. And that's literally what this fight was. It was Maia looking for a takedown and Woodley doing just enough damage and takedown avoidance to win the fight, which makes for a boring fight. And that's, I just couldn't imagine with GSP. It's going to be similar. And then as boring as GSP is on the flip side, forget it, man. I don't really want to see that. I don't want to see GSP fight anymore to begin with. I don't care about that dude.
I don't necessarily. I'm over it. I'm not clamoring for GSP Will either. I just think that whole dynamic of him trashing the champion. I guess that's the good thing about Dana, because he's always been that brash dude, and he tries to be honest about his roster and when fights are boring and when they're not. So,
but Dana will say things just to say things too. I mean, remember, this is the same guy that said there'll never be women's divisions in the UFC, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, we can make money with them? Oh, well, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
So he's going to just talk out of his ass. That's what he does.
It's an interesting position too, because it would be like putting the difference is you put Adam Silver out there to also be a guy that's going to be frontline commentary. You're going to get straight lawyer talk. But at least Dana's not afraid to let it fly and mix it up, right?
Yeah. You always know where he stands, right or wrong. Whether you agree with him or not, he's not going to just give you a politically correct answer. He's going to tell you what he thinks. Now, sometimes he thinks like an idiot, and that's okay. That's his, you're going to get that from him, but that's fine. At least you know he's being honest most of the time. What I'm with you, though, what I want to know is what is Tyrone Woodley not telling us that he knows, which I'm sure it's
probably some dirty move or dirty approach that obviously the UFC, I don't imagine it's something that's going to like end the UFC, but I do think it's something that's a little juicy.
Yeah, maybe you don't want your bones out there, though. You know what I mean? You don't want that dirty laundry out. But at the same time, you don't want to be threatening Dana White.
Yeah, I mean, now he has to win. Because the next time he tries to get a title shot, it's going to be difficult if he loses.
Has there ever been a champion that's been cut?
Not as a champion. I've seen people been stripped. They've stripped belts a lot. But you got to fight.
Could you just imagine if they just dropped him? You know what? You're not worth the headache. Bye. We'll find a new champ.
That'd be terrible.
Whew. I could see that. But that is something Dana White would do. That is something he would do.
Okay, so I got a question for both of you, but it's one that I've been kicking around, but it's one that's very top of mind in sports right now. But Barry, if you were going to die, would you want to die on stage doing comedy?
I do most nights.
Okay. Nick, would you want to die in the middle of the Barry Warner show while you were producing?
Probably not.
Oh, God.
This topic was broached in, believe it or not, the NFL yesterday, and it got a little interesting. And we'll get to that in a whole lot more. We're at the midway point, so we'll be back with a whole lot more, including that, right here on The Usual Suspects. So don't go anywhere. ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Nick, Barry, Joel, till 4, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We continue to roll on. I teased this before the break, but this is something that, I mean, I thought about it. I'm thinking to myself, in the NFL, they're talking now about CTE and concussions and how devastating they can be. And we know that the study that we covered earlier this week said, 111 out of 112 brain studied?
110 out of 111, yeah.
Okay.
From the NFL.
Had CTE.
Yeah.
Then New York Jets rookie Jamal Adams made comments yesterday when he said he believes that the football field would be the perfect place to die and really was not worried about CTE. So Morris Claiborne, who most of you Dallas Cowboy fans will recognize the name over the last several years as a veteran defensive back who signed with the Jets, discussed CTE and head injuries with the New York Daily News, said, "A lot of people don't believe me when I say this, but I would die out there on that football field. This is my life. This is what I do. I give it my all, and I would die out there. If I was concussed that bad where they said, you can't go out back out there or you'll potentially lose your life, I'd say, I got to go. I got to go play. I got to go play." To which Martellus Bennett responded, "I hope all these young cats that are willing to die for the game of football find a higher purpose in life. Because, look, football is great, but I ain't dying for this S. LOL."
Yeah, you know, it's like you asked me, would I die for comedy? No. Mm-mm. Wouldn't die for this radio gig. I wouldn't get brain damage for any of this stuff either. I get it. It's a lot of money. I do get it. But what good is it if you aren't here to use it, spend it?
I mean,
or you don't have your faculties, you know, to enjoy it.
You start pointing to the guys that very quickly realized it's not worth taking the risk and just packed it up and went home. You know, you look at this week, John Urschel, offensive lineman for the Ravens, but a really, really smart dude with an Ivy League education. Started to weigh it all and said, at 26 years old, I'm retiring. I'm done. I don't want to deal with all that. He's the 14th player to retire at age 30 or younger this offseason. You don't think that that's a factor? I'm not saying it is in every single case, but I'm saying that's a factor.
Yeah. That's scary, man. Dude, you know, it's one thing to have a bum knee, get a knee replacement, a hip replacement. There is no brain replacement. You can't fix that. You know what I mean?
I think this also has to do a little bit with the age discrepancy, right? Bennett's a point in his career where he's kind of taking some damage, right? It's like, I remember asking a former player, I don't remember who it was, like, what do you think of that quick turnaround where, you know, you might play like on a Thursday night and then come back and play like on a, you know, on a Monday or whatever. And he was like, you know, earlier in my career, I was way more open to it. I was, you know, I wanted to play, but later I appreciated the extra time off, you know? And I think this is a guy, Jamal Adams, who's 21 years old and he's a, you know, I wouldn't say aspiring football player because he is a Jet, but like he's aspiring to have this amazing career. And, you know, I can kind of see myself saying something like that at 21 years of age. I don't agree with it at all, but I can kind of see myself saying something like that because I'm so young. I'm probably healthier than the guy that's 5, 6, 7 years older than me. That's all.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And on the flip side, though, you got Chris Borland, the linebacker out of Wisconsin, 1 year into the league, has a really good rookie year with the San Francisco 49ers and just decides, too much for me, man. Too many risks, too many concerns.
Absolutely.
I'm done. And that's, but again, the guys that we're talking about, the guy with the Ravens and Borland, these guys were like highly, highly educated, already offered big-time jobs because of the fact that they had something to fall back on. A lot of guys don't have anything to fall back on.
Right.
This is it for them. And because as long as they're playing, they know what they're bringing in, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Or wrong.
Yeah, it does. It certainly makes a difference. I would love to someone to ask him that question 5, 6 years down the road. And just to see.
As a follow-up.
Just to see.
Yeah. Great point. Speaking of football, the Texans added safety Marcus Gilchrist, who was cut by the Jets in the offseason, 28 years old, 29, something like that. Mm-hmm. He's going to compete for the starting gig. So that's going to be interesting to see. He kind of strikes me as a guy that would be like Quentin Dimps-esque, right? Like you added a vet when you added Dimps, and he has that experience over younger guys like Howell. But then as the season went on, he kind of proved with that veteran, you know, being that veteran presence back there to be something. So I think they're saying if he's healthy, I think he had some injury issues that he's got to get taken care of. He had a torn patellar tendon. And so if that's healthy and he's out there competing, don't be surprised if Gilchrist is starting at the beginning of the season or at some point, you know, early on.
And you brought the comparison I was going to make with Demps. We were just talking about him, and I think that he's with the Bears now. But we loved him because he was on the air and he was a really good dude. But he had a really good season last year, and they need to address the fact that the secondary is as big of a concern as anything with that team other than quarterback, you know, and just, you know, worried about how that's going to play out. we know, and we've been over this a million times, but you got to see if Johnson's healthy. You got to see if J.Jo's got anything left in the tank. You know, there's so many different, you know, where's Kareem going to play? And can he still be effective? Is he going to be moved to safety? Is he going to stay at the corner? And then how are you going to replace the guys you lost in Bouye and Demps?
Yeah, and it's I mean, that is their glaring weakness on defense right now is that, you know, the back end at safety. So adding him, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. If he turns out, great. If not, you know, you still had Howe and those guys back there already. So also just I ran across this. I thought this was kind of interesting. Texans coach Bill O'Brien said Deshaun Watson is, quote, ahead of any rookie quarterback I've ever been around, end quote. O'Brien is not known as a guy to come out and say stuff like that. So I find this as a fan and, you know, as a sports talk radio guy to be interesting on a couple of levels. One, is he trying to push Tom Savage? That's the sports guy in me thinking that. Is this just to make Tom, you know what I mean? Is he just out there giving some sort of hype and speech to say, look, we went and got this guy. But that's not, I mean, that's my thought. But then I also think that's not O'Brien's style. He's a, you know, he's out there. He's got a lot to learn. He's a good teammate. He's going to be good, you know, yada, 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 giving you that generic speech. So for him to come out and show a little confidence in the kid early on and say something like that is, it's encouraging. This thing says, in June, O'Brien said Watson was, quote, not nearly where he needs to be to start his tune. But as soon as changed in the last week, in addition to his comments, the coaches said Watson is, quote, ahead of schedule in his development. The Texans likely still want to take it slow with their rookie quarterback, but they're at least laying the groundwork for him to jump Tom Savage before week one. Which, again, I think that's what they're trying to do, is he's trying to say, hey, man, I came out and said Savage is definitely going to be starting, but you can't keep this kid down. So as the fan, that excites me to hear these kind of things from Bill O'Brien.
Did Bill O'Brien coach Savage when he was a rookie, correct? Okay, I just wanted to make stupid question.
They drafted him.
Well, right.
Because I kind of had the same thought process as Barry. I'm initially thinking, look, out of the Bill Belichick school, you don't comment on these guys other to say they need to work hard, they got more to do, and they hopefully can help the team, essentially. But I also think about what we've talked about with several different sports, and when it comes down to getting things into the media, you can plan it, your agent can plan it, teams can plan it, but whether they believe it or not, sometimes they also want to get the hype machine revved up a little bit, too, to draw some more attention and excitement around the team. Because a day earlier, ESPN came out with their top five teams to make a jump and their top five teams that were expected to have a drop-off. And the Texans were one of the teams to have a drop-off. So it might be almost
did
a
they
little
give bit, reasons? I'd be interested to hear what the did. Reasons were. What are the reasons?
And again, you take it all in a grain of salt. So it's two of the teams that they have making big jumps and improvements, or three. The San
Titans.
Diego, the Chargers.
Chargers, okay.
You know, teams that, the Cardinals, who had a down year. Yeah. But, you know, good. So you got teams like that. And then teams that are likely to take a drop, the Raiders. But that's because they were 12-4. So they're assuming there's going to be a possible slight drop off. The division's better. But in terms of the Texans, we can get to it. They have a lot of different reasons, but and some for you, Barry, some Pythagorean expectations and number crunching into the process. But we can get to that in the next segment and see what you think, as well as a whole lot more. So if you want to join the show, please hit us up on Twitter. It's at Barry is Funny. It's at The Producer Nick, and it's at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Or dial it, text it, 713-780-3776. Be back with a whole lot more ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, it's Joel, Nick, and Barry till 4. We've definitely covered the sports quotient today.
Have we?
We've gotten quite a bit.
I have text. I have more bad news. The text line will not let it go.
Well, I have, so therefore you can read them if you'd like. But they're not going to have any effect on me.
You do fake blow on air, Barry. I'm pretty sure you've got brain damage already. When we were talking about the brain damage issues and it not being worth it.
Okay.
So apparently I have brain damage already. Just got back to the radio. Have you guys discussed Joel fighting Chuck E. Cheese yet?
Chuck E. Cheese. That is one of the things that he used to hate that I used to say.
That is hilarious.
I used to call. Oh, no, he didn't like it when fans used to say, what is the big muskrat in the Rockets the bear. Jersey?
Yeah. He would genuinely get upset about it?
He didn't like it.
The showbiz bear. I would die for this great country. I'm with you, sir. Thank you. Going night-night forever while getting a lap dance. I guess that's one way this guy wants to die. Oh, snap, it said.
That's interesting, though. Didn't you say, or did you see when Richard Pryor was talking about, it was part of his routine, but that he referred to someone in his family that went in the act.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Because his mom was a prostitute.
That. Yep.
And his dad was what, a pimp?
Was it, or his uncle or something.
So his uncle, yeah, and he said, I think that was it, and he said his uncle died while doing it.
Yeah. Somebody said, Barry, too late. Brain damage is already set in for you. All right. You need you guys to step it up. Guys, what's the best way to handle slash interact with that weird guy at work? I don't know. I'm trying, but, you know, sometimes Joel is, he's just, it's too much to handle.
You know that give
and take? It's too much to handle. Yeah?
You know that give and take?
Yeah?
Yeah, this is the take. This is exactly what this is.
I mean, if I knew how to handle that weird guy at work, believe me. My life would be so much easier.
If it's a weird guy that nobody wants to work with, be the one person that's willing to work with the weird guy, and maybe you'll look good in front of your superiors.
That's what you're doing at 10 o'clock, right?
Wait a second. You can't be upset when I do it, and then you turn around and do it.
There's a give and take. I take it, so I took it, but I can also give it out.
Warner's about to barge through this door right now.
Oh, my God, no.
No, Jim Crane's not in here.
Oh, God. But I want to know what's weird about the guy. Like, what is it that makes him weird? Is it one of those guys that, like, you know, he's got, like, the weird gotcha eye? Or, you know what I mean? Like, what's weird about him? Does he have a lisp? Does he got, like, one of those claw hands? That's what I need to know how to deal with it. Because if it's just saying weird, then, I mean, look, dude, everybody's weird in their own way. You're probably weird to him. You know what I mean? So I want to know what's weird about him before I can tell you how to handle it.
Like, we've all dealt with people like that. I mean, we kid about Barry Warner, but like that are weird. But we can give examples. Like, the example I can give you is because Lisa's a reality TV freak, and she loves this million dollar listing shows. Like, right now it's Million Dollar Listing New York, and it's three. They kind of profile three real estate guys making $1 million plus deals in New York. And one of the guys has a guy that works for him that is overly touchy-feely emotional guy. Or it's not emotional, but like every time he sees the boss, he will give him like a butt grab and a butt slap and a hug and kiss his cheek and say, come here, sexy. And the boss, who's one of the guys they chronicle, always kind of goes, and he takes it, but he doesn't like it. And then he says, he shows that even when, like, he sends texts and text to him, he'll use the emoji of like a puckered up emoji and then like a hand slap, and in parentheses it says butt slap.
That's so weird.
See, that's what I'm saying. So there are, you know, everybody's got their own case of weirds, but that's an example.
Like a guy coming into the studio with his shirt off, that's weird,
and his jeans dangerously too low to the equator?
I don't know. Texter that sent that in, I want to know what's weird about the guy before I can tell you how to handle or interact with him, or my opinion on it. I'm sure you'll have your own. I'd be interested to know.
Okay.
But yeah, so you sent me this chart. Let's do this. What are we looking at here?
Well, you can break down the chart if you want, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's just as easy as it is when you look at the teams that were on this list, and I guess you can cover the chart if you want.
I don't know what's on the chart.
I mean, essentially, it's like you can look at schedule. You can look at teams like we talked about in terms of the teams that are probably the easiest to pick in terms of five teams that are going to have a jump up. Arizona, because they were 7-8-1. They still have everybody back. Carson Palmer comes back. They improve the defense a little bit. You know, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, who went crazy with a lot of the guys. They added a ton of people. Their schedule, strength of schedule, is the toughest in the NFL. But, you know, they look at everything from records and games decided by 7 points or less, schedule, point differential, things like that. That one's one that you can scrutinize. But the easy ones are the Cleveland Browns, the San Diego Chargers, you know, teams that were really, really down, really, really bad, that have no way to go anywhere basically but up.
So what do they say about the Texans and why they're going to be down this year? Or take a step backwards.
I'm scrolling down to get that. I was getting the top five in terms of teams that will make a jump up.
And by the way, that Pythagorean expectation is that formula that your boy...
Daryl Morey.
Yeah. D to the Morey came up with while working with stats. So,
you know, if you use that, you can determine the MVP.
I was thinking about using it in corp, because usually I just do like eye test and knowledge, and I'll do some research on teams and who they've added and all that to kind of start, you know, when I'm like, okay, who's going to win this division? I might just go Pythagorean expectation this year and do all my picks that way. Might just nerd out. Forget on the field and the eye test.
Does this mean in fantasy football you're drafting nine running backs?
That's dork. No, I won't do that. That's just silly talk.
Okay.
Because when you do that, then the whole team, the whole league conspires to not trade with you. And now you're stuck.
So they said things like the decline for teams, most of the decline in teams that will make a jump up is because they lost close games. Obviously, they'll take in, you know, consideration strength of schedule. There were 10 teams with a combined 60-12 record in games decided by one touchdown or less. The following season, they didn't just regress towards the mean, they regressed precisely to the mean, going a combined 31-31 for a .500 record in close games after going 83% in the year before. So
what does it say about the Texans?
So I'm getting to the Texans. Scrolling down, if I must be honest. And this article is extremely long, by the way. I sent it to you. They said with Houston was in a relatively easy division. They didn't play a particularly charitable schedule, but by my accounting, the Texans faced the 12th toughest slate in the league. They did beat the Chiefs by 7, and they had another 7-point victory over the Lions, although the latter team ranked 27th in DVOA. I didn't get you the exact what DVOA means. But essentially what they're saying is their average loss was 13.3 points, including a 27-point loss to the Patriots. As we all know, they were really 8-1 in meaningful one-score games, given that they lost a meaningless Week 17 game to the Matt Castle-led Titans. And even that required a late Brock Osweiler rushing touchdown to make it close. Their largest win of the season was over the lowly Bears in the opener by 9 points. Meanwhile, they had 3 losses of 18 points or more. So they joined the privileged ranks of those teams that posted a winning record while being outscored for the entire season. They posted the 4th worst point differential for a team with a winning record since 1989, and things don't often go well for teams in that bracket. Want me to go on?
No, because did they mention being worse on the offensive line? Because that would be where I would start, and then you could debate whether they're better or worse at quarterback. But maybe the same, because Brock Osweiler had a little bit of experience. Tom Savage has very little experience, and Deshaun Watson is a rookie. That's where I would start and end that conversation about why they would be worse than they were last year.
They said the problem, though, is that the Texans were also last in special teams, and the division has gotten better. The Jaguars imported arguably the 2 best defensive players in free agency with Calais Campbell and a former Texan A.J. Bouye. They said that Andrew Luck, as long as his shoulder is better, should make the Colts instantly better. And the Titans profited from robbing the Rams last year by adding 2 first-round picks to their roster at positions of weakness.
So, in other words, they don't get to pick on their own division as much.
That's in part of it, but this thing is really long.
Yeah. Well, just
and then they touch on the quarterback.
Yeah. So just to clear it up, DVOA, defense adjusted value over average. It's essentially ranked as a percentage. So the results is expressed as a percentage. So a team with a DVOA of 10% is that much better than the league average on a play by play basis. That's what it means.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I had to look it up. I don't know.
But I appreciate you breaking it down.
Yeah.
All right. So you got that. You know what? That's why they play the games.
Yep.
So we've got 2 in the books, 1 to go, 1 full hour left of the big show. If there's something on your mind that we have missed or that you want to get off your chest and bring to the table, please do 713-780-3776. That is the HRP listener line where you can call, you can text, and or you can tweet us. We're the usual suspects. This is ESPN 97.5. Yeah.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.